Welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast about science fiction, TV, and film, featuring actors, directors, and writers of color. My name is Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at sfincolor@gmail.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr as SF in Color.
And today we're talking about... Why did you just squeal?
I was excited.
Oh, you're excited about this episode?
Yes.
I really like this episode, too.
Episode 10 of Sense8, What is Human?
Yes.
This is such a good episode.
Yeah, I really like this episode. I mean, I guess I don't really know how... I have mixed feelings about the whole birth scene thingy montage, but, like...
As we all do, I think.
As we all should. But I really did enjoy this episode. Like, definitely way more than the previous one. I don't know if we want to split it up into characters or just go chronologically. I feel like it makes sense to go chrono, but what do you think?
I think characters work, even though it will be mostly chronological, but characters are how I usually do it. We've got not much from certain characters. There's really only the few focus characters in this episode, which we have seen before. We really get a lot from Wolfgang, and we got a lot from Leto.
Mm.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had mixed feelings about Wolfgang, but he impressed me. I will grant you.
He was great in this episode, yeah. Because it's like, he was kind of bland for most of the show, I suppose. And somewhat forgettable. As evidenced by my complete, like, I couldn't remember him last episode, right? But he definitely left an impression in this episode. So, who shall we start with first?
I would start with Wolfgang.
Okay, Wolfgang.
I mean, I think part of it may be that he's been extremely passive throughout the show.
That's, like, his thing, though. You know?
Well, yeah.
Like, his, like, stoicism... did I say that right? He's very stoic and just kind of like, I don't know, like he's just there.
The thing is that he stole the diamonds, I think, what, in episode one?
It's been a long time, yeah.
Right, so that's basically, everything has been the fallout from that one event, essentially. He does get the relationship with Kala, but I don't know, I always attribute that more to Kala than to him.
Sure.
Maybe that's on me. But... you know, he's being kind of overwhelmed by Felix, who has kind of a larger-than-life personality, and, you know, by his crazy family, which I want to talk about because they are insane.
Uh-huh.
but, you know, he's kind of being overwhelmed by these really abrasive personalities that kind of steal the show from him. But he got a chance to shine here, and I was so excited.
And shine he did. So he kind of, I don't know. I know I bring up like certain shows over and over again on the podcast, but like that was such a Breaking Bad moment, man. Like meeting the bad guys on the top of the rooftop, and you're like, what kind of trick does Wolfgang have up his sleeve? What's gonna happen? So I really like that scene where he's just microwaving the diamonds. Like, it was just so
That's
great.
That's pretty good.
It was so good. He's melting
that
the
was
ice.
Like, what?
Right?
What?
Well, I knew they were. I knew the moment he opened the fridge. I knew that's where he kept the diamonds. But did it take you a while to figure that out, or were you just kind of like, this is such a weird scene?
Well, I think the moment was a little weird when he opened up the freezer. And there was just the ice and a gun, I think. And just given what had come before it, I just had assumed that he was going to be reaching for the gun. Just kind of had a maniacal look in his eye. And so I was like, okay, it's time for him to fight. He's going to reach for the gun. But instead, he reached for the ice, and I was like, oh. And then I figured out. I was like, oh, the diamonds, I get it. But... I really liked that because he looked so angry. I was like, he's going to reach for the gun. Nope. Mm-mm.
You know, I keep thinking you're going to break into a song.
Me?
Yeah. Isn't there that song from Chicago?
Oh, yeah.
How? Okay. what just happened here? I just went into your brain for, or like, I don't know. I thought you're supposed to be the musical theater reference person nerd. Anyway.
I don't think so. You just did it. You just did it.
Okay, girl. I mean, I don't want to sing it because I don't know the song very well, but.
So, yes.
Yeah, that's, I was counting on that. I was waiting for that to occur. Anyway.
The gun. Anyway.
I gotta put that video up on Facebook. Classic.
Oh my god. Don't do it.
So, yeah, he microwaves the diamonds, because he wants to, I guess, he's giving his cousin, I guess, a chance to take the diamonds and walk away from this and, like, leave him and Felix alone because he just threatened them in the hospital. Obviously, the cousin is a complete idiot and just makes things worse for himself.
Know, because, like, he's giving him the diamonds, and yes, that does give him a chance to leave if he wants to do it non-confrontationally, but I don't think that's what Wolfgang expects. I kind of thought of the diamonds as more of like a distraction, to get him properly in place so he can, you know, do what he has to do. Because I mean, I don't think he's going to be, you know, searching through the wreckage for the diamonds.
No, they didn't show that at all. He doesn't care.
I mean,
to quote Leto, it doesn't matter.
If it was me, maybe I would. But there you go.
But that's not Wolfgang. That's not what he came there for. So, yeah, he goes up to that rooftop in his car, in his BMW.
Is it a rooftop?
What?
I thought it was more like a parking lot or something. Because you could see, like, across the way, you could see, like, cars kind of driving by.
That probably makes, like, more sense on a rooftop. Yeah. I don't know. It was, like, the top level of, like, a parking garage or something.
Something.
Anyway, so he's on this isolated area with the, I guess, the cousin and his mooks or whatever. And, you know, they pat him down. He gives him the diamonds. And then, of course, naturally, the cousin takes this opportunity to shout abuse at Wolfgang and, like, assault him and everything.
The good relationship.
Right. And, like, yeah, I honestly, watching that scene, watching him get kicked around, like, it hurt. It was awful. I was just like, no, Wolfgang, no. You know he has a trick up his sleeve. You know he does. I mean, as did the cousin, but the cousin was just like, he was easily fooled. So
that the cousin really work. No. I mean, I will admit, though, the cousin, I believe his name is Steiner.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, really good at threatening people, like, just as an aside. Like, when he goes and visits, like, Felix in the hospital and he's, like, super hostile. I don't know. It's just, it was a really nice threatening scene. I was like, this guy knows what he's doing. Like, I'm impressed.
He's used to threatening people, yeah. That's his job.
And, like, everyone in Wolfgang's family is insane. That's what I've taken away from this.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, like, even Felix, who's, you know, kind of his, you know, kind of like his brother, not blood related, blah, 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 but, you know, the family you choose. But even he's a little crazy. I mean, like, a lot less crazy and less murderous, I guess. But
I mean, Wolfgang is the one sane man. So, yeah. At least that's how I've chosen to see him.
Yeah, I think that works. And the cousin, he is wearing, like, I don't know if you remember, he's wearing, like, a blazer with a t-shirt underneath.
Okay.
And I'm like, that's pretty 90s if I am not making up references.
Oh, is it? I wasn't really paying attention to his clothes. I think I was looking at other people's clothes, but
Did you notice his beard, though?
I think so.
His beard is, like, super duper thin. Like, you know how, like, a beard, like, generally starts kind of narrow at the chin and it kind of goes wider as it goes up the cheeks?
Right. Like a triangle.
His don't get wider. It just stays the same, narrow, like.
It's more like a rectangle?
Yeah.
I guess it depends on how you cut it, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I know how he got it that way. Like, that's, it just, really not attractive.
That's maybe the whole point. He's supposed to be a very unattractive, gross, disgusting character.
I get that, but I feel like he's someone who would be, like, really full of himself, and he would make himself look, like, really polished. And
have you seen his tats and his hairstyle? I mean, honest to God.
That's true. He clearly doesn't have a lot of fashion sense or style, but...
Yeah, dude. I think it's... He just likes he going should. Around threatening people with his posse and just being a horrible human being in general.
It's a nice posse, though. Not very smart, but, you know.
Yeah.
As posses go.
I found the woman in the hospital room to be very menacing. Like, I don't know, she just really intimidated
me. Yeah!
She was, like, she was really good, too. But she was really scary.
Yeah, we didn't see her. She didn't come and take the diamonds back.
Because she was smart. She didn't want to die.
Yeah.
She freaking knew. But yeah, so I guess they're you know, exchanging the diamonds in this parking lot. And, like, the cousin knows this is a trick, but, you know, he just kind of is like,
doesn't
okay.
know what it is.
He's like, I don't know what it is, so whatever. Starts kicking Wolfgang around. And Leto pops up in his underwear because he's still, you know, this is moping. From... He was still moping in his, like, hot tub. This is his empty hot tub. Fully dressed with, like, gross stuff on his shirt and whatever. And he's kind of analyzing the situation. And I just really liked their interaction. Like, it was so good. And I think this is maybe the first time we see, a weird... Or at least the first time in a long time that we've seen, like, a slowdown or a slow-mo of what's going on.
Mm. Yeah.
Because that was very interesting, because that was a little bit different from the normal format when the senseis are talking to each other. Normally, time does not slow down for them while they're talking. So I understand that it might be more of, like, a headspace thing, but it was still really cool.
Yeah, I really liked that moment. The way that I kind of took it, I don't know if this is the correct interpretation, but, like, the way that the senseis interact with each other, they kind of understand each other on, like, a very, like, basic. Intimate level.
Okay.
Very, like, instinctual. They don't, like, they just know things about each other that they haven't been told, which is a very convenient plot device. I mean, they knew that they did that for Into the Badlands too, but there wasn't an excuse there.
Yeah, at least this makes some kind of sense.
But like in this case, I kind of took their conversation, which had to be slowed down for the audience, as something that happened in time extremely quickly because their connection.
It's like that thing that happened in Sherlock.
Yeah.
You know when like I think he gets shot. Sherlock gets, spoiler alert, but, like, who cares for Sherlock? And it happened, like, literally, like, 3 years ago. Sherlock is shot, Sherlock. And while he's falling towards the ground after getting shot, he's, like, quickly, logically trying to come up with ways to survive and deal with the situation as fast as he can. And that's all slowed down for the audience to explain his reasoning, but, like, obviously in real time. Right. He's falling to the floor, so he doesn't have much time. Yeah, I think I understood it to be like that, but it was cool because, like, we haven't gotten that slowdown thing before, and they use it again later in the episode. Also, I mean, I just felt like this episode had a lot of kind of cool sensei interacting and it being surreal moments, like when Wolfgang is walking through the Holocaust Memorial and you're just, like, passing by all the other senseis. Like, that was just such a cool thing, you know?
Yeah, they're increasingly aware of each other, and we're getting interactions that are beyond just, like, the basic ones, you know? Like, in the beginning, it was, like, Wolfgang and Kala, and not that I have a problem with that, don't get me wrong, OTP for life, but we're getting people who didn't necessarily, like, fit together interacting, and you're seeing how they actually do kind of fit together.
Yeah, we have Leto and Wolfgang, and then we also, I'll mention it later, but we have Cafius and Kala interacting for the first time, and it was just really nice, because we're so used to people being in their specific pairs, and it's nice to break out of that, for once.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Which, I mean, this started with last episode, right? Because we got Nomi talking with Leto, and finally Leto's out of his weird little bubble, where he's just, it's just him, Hernando, and, like, Daniela. I hear police sirens on my side, so sorry, guys.
What did you do, Maggie?
I didn't do anything. I'm innocent! but anyway, so... Yeah, back to Leto and Wolfgang.
Yeah, so Steiner is asking Wolfgang how he got the case open, right?
Right.
Like, how he got through it. And Wolfgang actually tells the truth, saying that he cracked it.
Yeah, right, because that's Wolfgang.
Not... Right, exactly. But he does not believe him.
Right.
Which, I don't know. It was a nice callback to the moment that happened, you know, probably in episode one or something. And I can barely remember it at that point.
Oh, wow.
But... Yeah. But it was, I mean, even though it was a while ago, I remember, like, that triumphant feeling. Because, you know, he did something that was supposedly impossible, and it was really cool.
Yeah.
And no one, he's never going to get credit for it, but well, he knows
he did. And if he does, he'll, like, you know, be locked up and stuff. But, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a triumphant moment for him, like, personally, to have cracked that safe. And so... Steiner doesn't believe him. Slash is just, like, too egotistical to even think that's possible. And, you know, starts abusing him. Ruins Wolfgang's plans because he was going to reach for, you know...
The gun.
He was going to reach for the gun. but, like, him, he's, like, too far away. So then Leto steps in to kind of help him out. And that was such a great moment. Like, I really liked it. I think also the fact that Leto was, like, you know, in basically his underwear, and
he's like, only one sock on.
Only one sock on. Oh, wow, I didn't even notice that. Only has one sock on. And it's, like, it makes that scene where Leto is in place of Wolfgang and is kind of, like, lying to the cousin, it just makes the whole thing feel more vulnerable because he's just, like, in his skivvies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought it was a good visual choice, you know, having it be an overhead shot of Leto. He's just so small on the ground, looking up.
Yeah.
It was just really effective. It was really good.
And then
it works because Leto is awesome at acting.
Yeah. Like, when Leto showed up, and, you know, we know that he's not in a great headspace right now.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, great. Like, what is he going to do? Because, you know, we know that some of the others are more skilled at fighting, like, Sun or Will or something. And, mm-hmm. like, okay, why don't they show up? What the heck is Leto going to do? But we find out Leto has skills, which we knew.
His skill is acting and lying.
Good job.
Good job, Leto.
He's good at lying.
You're very good at lying.
That's not really that much of a compliment, but a little bit.
It is literally his job, though. He's an actor. Acting is basically lying, convincingly.
But it's also that, you know, he's been lying about his sexuality as well.
Well, yeah, we all knew that. But this is where the episode where that gets all, you know, addressed. So Leto lies to, you know, help Wolfgang out. So he's able to distract the cousin. That line about, like, you know, which one of you guys would actually perform fellatio to get these diamonds? And that one guy's like, I would. He's and he's like, not the right answer. And I was like,
It was so good. A great moment.
It was so good. And he's just
like
the look on the cousin's face is like, excuse me, no, wrong answer.
Like, the dude just, like, does, like, this little shrug, and I'm just like, that was, like, one of my favorite moments in the episode. I was like, yes.
It was so good, though. And then the cousin's like, okay, whatever. But that gives Wolfgang enough time to reach for the gun again and shoot and, you know, start shooting at the various men. Oh, gosh. Yeah, the siren's getting way loud now. Okay, whatever. I'll keep talking. It gives him time to reach for the gun and start shooting, so he doesn't die on that rooftop alone. And, oh my gosh, that's really distracting. Okay.
I hear it now.
Yeah, it's really loud. It's like, I hear a fire engine and everything, or fire truck horn. So,
hope everything's okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm in a city. I'm in an urban area. So, like, you're going to hear sirens all the time. So.
Yeah. It's like an old Western shootout.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, like, twitching your fingers over the gun and stuff. Like, again, this is where I got the Breaking Bad feels of this episode. Yeah. Because, especially when he pulls out the tricks that you don't see coming, that's very Breaking Bad. Okay, so he's shooting everyone. The cousin's about to escape, and he's like, "I'll get you for this, and your little dog too."
I'll get you, my pretty.
Yeah,
and your little dog too.
Yes, I just said yes. So he's kind of trying to be like, "Well, I'll kill you or deal with you later." But guess what? Wolfgang has hidden in the trunk of his car. It's a big freaking bazooka fire gun. It was amazing. That to me, there were like, I think there was like two highlights for me in this episode, and that was one of them. When he pulls out that gun, and the cousin's like, "What is that?" And then he just shoots it, and the cousin's just like screaming obscenities. That was amazing, and then it blows up, and I was like, "Yes, this is what I came here for."
This well, is exactly what I came.
Not exactly, you know. Like I don't. I'm not like a Michael Bay fan. I don't want explosions like all the time. And like, I came here for plot. But you know, like, it was so satisfying. Like,
when it's properly set up, explosions can be just beautiful. Usually, they're just explosions for the sake of explosions. But you know, this was a beautiful moment. This was Wolfgang's triumphant moment.
Oh yeah.
It kind of reminded me. I haven't seen it in a long time, so I don't remember all of the details, but there's an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer where there's, like, this ancient villain, basically, and Buffy just takes out this bazooka and, like...
Oh, my God.
Let's just see if that works! And it does, because it's a bazooka. And, I don't know, it just felt really similar to me, because I just...
Yeah, he just pulled out a bazooka from the freaking trunk of his car. Frankly, I'm surprised they didn't search his car, but whatever. I guess, I don't know. Whatever. I guess they thought, he stepped out of the car and away from the car, so I guess they thought he'd be fine or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're stupid. The gangsters are stupid, so whatever.
Yeah. I don't know, like, when I first watched, I had thought that, like, maybe he had rigged the car, like, to be an explosive or something.
Sure.
That's why he had to get over to it. And, like, some glorious suicidal explosion.
Well, that's what the cousin says, right? Well, he doesn't say that about the car, but he says that about the diamond. He's like, what if they're like, you know, rigged?
Yeah. But nope.
It
was done the old-fashioned way.
Yep.
Big explosion.
Cool guys don't look at explosions. But yeah, it was so good. And just having, like, you know, he's like, he pulls up to the place with the sunglasses and the cigarette, and that's very, you know, that's very, like, Western's, like, it's about to go down. Yeah, I'm trying to think, do I have anything else about like, Wolfgang, at least for this first half? Yeah.
Well, when Wolfgang, like, pulled up in the car, and, you know, he's smoking, and he looks just so cool, you know? I was like, maybe he got this skill from Leto, too, you know? Like, going into the scene, looking like a badass.
Well, wasn't it supposed to be the opposite way around? Like, later Leto kind of does the sunglass and cigarette thing?
But to me, that's still emulating Leto in his acting scenes.
Oh.
That's the way I read it.
The way, like, I read it was, like, this was Wolfgang's way of kind of psyching himself up, and then Leto kind of adopted that when he went in to save Daniela. That's the way I saw it, just because cause and effect and all that, but...
I guess I put the cause kind of farther back, like, kind of in the, you know, the acting that Leto has done. Because it felt very much like a soap opera, like, lead-up scene, in a way.
I felt like that more when we got Leto's fight scenes, but we'll get to
that
him.
That, too. That was more. That was more, but yeah.
So, I said there was a lot of smoking in this episode. Lots and lots of smoking.
Yes.
And... I love the sound effect when, like, I think Wolfgang, like, flicks that that cigarette from his hand and just makes a sound. And they repeat that same effect for Leto. It's, I don't know, it's pretty, it's, like, over-the-top dramatic, but, like, it works. I really liked, let me see. Oh, wait, no, sorry. I skipped way to my notes about Leto, but Sorry, I take that back. I mean, I guess the same thing. That So what I was saying about the cigarette sound effect, I think that was Leto only. I don't know if that happened in... sorry, I skipped too far ahead of my notes. And you know how this show is, like, not... It skips around from people to people. Yeah. Sorry about that, guys. I got completely confused. But yeah, I think that's it for... I mean, I also really like the way they ended that scene with, like... They, like, Leto was just, like... Like, wow, like, that was amazing. And, like, they just kind of affirm each other and just, like... It's. I mean, I feel like Wolfgang never smiles. But... So, like, it was nice to see him, like, actually be kind of triumphant for once in a while.
Yeah. It was very... Yeah. Wolfgang had a very understated response. And Leto was, like, celebrating. And it just felt like a very nice comparison of kind of the way that they look at things.
Yeah.
But it was just... It happened, like, all Wolfgang's pieces happened early enough in the episode where I was like, okay, this is nice, but maybe Leto can take some of this and start channeling into his life, and that would right. be awesome, wouldn't
and
it?
Vice versa, yeah. 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 Shall we continue on to Leto, since he had yes. another big chunk? Okay, so then Leto, after the whole thing with Wolfgang, I guess he's, like, fired up and, like, I gotta do this, I gotta make things right, and yep. he goes back to the bar... I noticed...
Oh, well, one second yeah. before that.
Sure.
So he gives, Hernando another call.
Right.
And he's saying that he's going to fix it, you know? He's going to fix his mistake, which is exactly...
What Daniela said, yeah. Basically
what... Yeah, Daniela said. And I really like that callback because it was kind of him acknowledging his blame in this. And we do get that a little bit in the interaction at the end of the episode where we do get the reunion.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of, I don't know, to me it felt like proof that he wasn't just doing this to get Hernando back. He's actually kind of had some development as, like, a character.
Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. Like, I think it was very well-structured and thought out that, like, he wasn't doing this just to get him back. Like, it was because he acknowledged that he, like, messed up. And he took ownership yeah. and everything, yeah. Especially when he, and like, at the end, how he was talking and how he reintroduced Daniel, I think it was perfect. But, yeah, on to Leto. So, he goes back to the bar that he was at previously. I noticed that, like, they spelled whiskey with an A, and I was like, that seems wrong. So...
Where's the A in whiskey?
Exactly. There's no A in whiskey. So, because when they were, I think they were panning or dollying across the bar, down to the bartender in Leto, and I saw whiskey with an A, and I was like, that's not right. A completely random thing. But yeah, that line about tequila squared, I was like, so awkward and nerdy. And it's definitely like that. Remember we talked about how, like, the guy who writes for Sensei is known for, like, having weird lines sometimes. I was like, yeah. Well, this is definitely one of those times, because tequila yes, it squared.
It was a little odd, but...
It was a little stilted.
I could chalk it up to drunk Leto, I guess. I don't know.
Wait, say it again?
Not really. Maybe you could just chalk it up to drunkenness. It was weird.
I guess. He had two shots and then said tequila squared. I don't think you're going to get that drunk from two shots in, like, 2 seconds.
That's true. But he ends up with 6 shots of tequila.
Yeah, like, he had 4 shots of tequila before he went into that thing. Oh, and then he drove. So, bad, Leto. Bad. Oh, bad.
Yeah, don't drink and drive, kids.
Don't do that. But anyway, that aside, I don't know. I mean... That the interaction with the bartender was so funny to me. Like, I like how he was saying, like, your offer to do things to me in the bathroom was effective. And then he, like, kisses him, and then, like, he has his little speech about how much he's already discovered the love of his life, Hernando, and he's going to, like, get back with him. And then you just get that shot of, like, the smitten bartender. And, like, it was so
if
funny.
If Leto ever needs a favor, like, you know who he needs to go to, because that guy has a crush, man.
Oh my god, he was like so smitten, like touching his mouth, and I was like, bruh. That was so funny. Bruh. But yeah, and then we get
Daniela.
Yeah, we see Daniela and Joaquin at the house.
Having like the most elegant brunch ever.
Right, except like, she has, like, bruises on her face, and he has his shirt off, yes, and he's, like, a jerk, and, like, everything's horrible.
No, yeah, like, it's not, like, legitimately nice company, but, like, the food on the table looked so freaking elegant, like, I was like, let me just reach to the screen and eat some of that stuff. Just no big deal.
Right? So, okay, then we get this glorious slow-mo over the top so dramatic beautiful. Telenovela. Like, I really liked it because it was just like a callback to, like, all his other. When Leto was filming, right? And we got these weird dramatic slow mo things happening. Yep. It was like that same style. So it was such a good callback. We get him with the glasses and the sunglasses and the cigarette. And then, like, with the, like, the insane sound effect as he flicks it away and everything. It was so good.
Like, even, like, Daniela and Joaquin are, like, in slow-mo. And, like, she turns her head slowly. And I'm like, haha, this is going to be beautiful.
Sometimes Daniela's acting is a little bit much for me. Like, it's a little too much. But, like, I guess it works for this, I guess, telenovela type of thing that they're going for. So, you know...
Well,
Leto comes. Yeah, sorry, you were saying?
No, I was just going to say that, like, as he was pulling up, I'm like, I am 95% sure that this is going to sexually confuse Joaquin. Because, like.
Honestly, though,
a little bit. Like, he has a weird relationship with Leto.
He does, but it looks like he kind of disowned that fact once he found out that he was gay or something.
I don't know, because, like, I think he's a little gay. Just the way that he talks to Leto, like, he wants to, you don't know if he wants to be Leto or he wants to be with Leto, honestly.
Well, he's with Hernando, so that ship has sailed, but
super sailed.
Yeah, so he gets out of the car, states his intentions, and, like, obviously Joaquin is not going to let Daniela go without a fight, so they fight. It's pretty bad because Leto does not know how to fight. He's an actor. Clearly, any training for fight choreo has not helped him whatsoever.
I like how he's throwing the flower pots.
The flower pots. It was so bad. It was so bad, but it was so funny. Oh, my God.
It was so good.
Yeah. And then...
And, like, Joaquin, like... The way I put it is that he hulks out. Because, like, he has, like, a little tiny shirt on, and he takes it off, and he starts flexing, and all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, he's ripped.
Yeah, and obviously he's, like, beat people up before, so he's not afraid to, like...
Oh, yeah.
He's not afraid at all.
Like, he doesn't even, like, call, like... I'm sure he has mooks, right? But, like...
He doesn't call his mooks. He doesn't care. It's time to throw down. He knows he's gonna... Well, he thinks he's gonna win this fight. But that makes sense. Logically, he would. Yeah.
Right.
I got, like... So, he starts fighting, and I keep thinking, so, like, where are the other sensates? Like, aren't they, shouldn't they be helping him out? But then I thought, no, this is, like, Leto's personal journey. Like, he has to, at least has to try to fight by himself, you know? And then also I was thinking, like, when Joaquin gets him in the, I guess, like, in the jaw, and his head just shoots up, I, honest to God, for a half second, thought that he broke his neck and Leto was dead. Like, legit. It scared me for, like, gross. A couple seconds. But then he came back, and I was like, oh, okay. And then Wolfgang steps in. And then I was like, oh, thank God. Someone can actually solve the situation because Leo's not going to be able to do this by himself.
But before Wolfgang even comes, Danny hits him, not him, Leto, him, Joaquin.
Yeah.
In the back with a shovel.
Yeah, I live for that. I was like, I want to see her at least try to stand up for herself. I mean, I understand she's a battered woman, so it's going to be hard. But, like, yeah, seeing him, like, hit him with the shovel was, like, I don't know. It gave me life. I really enjoyed that.
It did. But, like, she hits him with the shovel, and as soon as she does it, she just drops it.
Yeah.
And, like, puts her hands up, like, wasn't me. Like.
Well, again, she's a battered woman.
Hold on to your shovel. I don't know.
It's the psychology of it, dude. You understand, right?
No, I understand that, like, but I don't think of her as a battered woman because she went back to him like, out of her own, like, it was her own choice, I guess.
But that's...
And I... not because she... I don't know how I'm saying this, because, like, I understand that...
I understand she went back to him because of the whole thing with Leto, and she wanted to protect him, but she's still a battered woman. You can see it all over in her actions when she's like, I'm sorry, and then he's tugging her by the hair, and she's like... She's a battered woman, dude. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, she's clearly a victim of domestic abuse.
No, absolutely. I'm not arguing that point at all. And, like, I understand that he has definitely been abusive towards her, physically and probably emotionally. I don't know. It's just, it's a very, I don't put her in the psychology of a battered woman because it wasn't like.
Well, let me look up. Let me look this up. Let me look up, I guess, what the official definition or whatever is. So.
Because, I guess.
So, battered person syndrome is a physical and psychological condition of a person who has suffered usually persistent emotional, physical, or sexual abuse from another person. Let's see. Anything else? I'm trying to look through.
Okay, then. Then yes. I guess that qualifies.
So, symptoms of battered person syndrome, a few of which are shared with PTSD. Person fears for their life, is fearful for more than 4 weeks. Performance at work or other important daily life activities is affected. Manipulated through threats of violence, unwanted sex, degradation, isolation, and more. Dislike their bodies and experience somatic health issues, sexual intimacy issues. So this is like just kind of reoccurring things. Other things would be the abuse thinks that the violence was his or her fault. The abuse has an inability to place okay. But like,
I think
it's kind of just a thing where, like, yes, even though she could, you know, she could theoretically kill or overpower him with the shovel if she kept going, like, just the fact that he, like, turns around and is threatening is enough to get her to stop because she's already in the cycle of, you know, like, he's going to hurt me and et cetera. It's, like, the way I thought of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I don't think Joaquin exactly falls into the whole typical abuser situation either, because it's not like he's even trying. He doesn't seem to be the kind of person who would be like, oh, I'm sorry, like, a day later. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't even think it's, like, a love thing. So I get what you're saying from that angle. Like, it's not like, oh, I love you, and then, like, they're like, okay, and they go back to them, and then, like, the cycle begins anew. It's not exactly like that. So I see what you mean.
Yeah.
But, like, there's still the whole, like, he is threatening to her even though she could overpower him at that time.
Yeah.
You know?
I see that, yeah.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. Sorry, I didn't mean to, like, rattle off all these wiki facts about, like, battered people, but, yeah, I think there's a lot of, you know, psychologically, that's why she can't exactly continue attacking him, which is where Leto steps in. But I like the fact that she did try. It wasn't, like, a thing where, oh, the man needs to save the woman from another man thing. You know, like, clearly Daniela is trying to stick up for herself, but the psychology of everything is not, you know, it's preventing her from doing so. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Leto's on the ground, right?
And there's that great sideways shot. Oh my god.
Yeah, the whole world is sideways.
So good.
Like, out of focus. And, like, Wolfgang is, like, there and helps him up. And I'm just like, it was such a nice moment where it's, like, the focus is on Leto. It was just so pretty looking.
And I love any time they use, like an unconventional shot like that. So good. But yeah.
And, like, Wolfgang is so scrappy. Like, that is... If I had to pick a word, maybe, to describe him, maybe that would even be it. Because he's just so scrappy. Like, in a fight.
Yeah.
It's not that, like, he can't... He's not even, like, that great of a fighter. He can take a punch.
He can hold his own.
He's very durable.
Well, I think we all know where that came from, right? I mean, getting beat up by your abusive father means you can take a punch.
Absolutely. And, like, even after, like, his father's passing, like, he hasn't exactly had an easy time of it.
Yeah, for sure.
He's definitely gotten in his fair share of fights.
Yeah, he's a tough guy. So.
Oh, yeah.
He's able to kind of step in where Leto stepped in from him earlier and, you know, beat Joaquin. And they're able to bring Daniela back from, like, this horrible place. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a visit to Hernando's place. And, oh, it's just so good.
It is.
It was just so good.
So he goes to see Hernando, and Hernando says, you know, given his Leto's face, like, he won't be able to shoot tomorrow. And then Leto's like, you do still love me. But then they're like, oh, it's your career, and blah, blah, blah. And Leto's like, I was a coward, and I took you for granted.
So good. I think my favorite part of that was when they're kissing and Danielle takes out her phone to take a picture.
Yes.
And Hernando's just like, really?
Really?
Hernando was everyone in that moment. He was the audience. He was everyone. Literally so good.
But like, Danny, like, her little shipper heart is like my little shipper heart. Like, she gets like a nice reunion with Hernando and they get like a nice hug or whatever. But like, she lives for, like, Hernando and Leto together.
Yeah. It was just nice to have those three back together again. So
it was. They're, like, the three musketeers.
Yeah. You know, this episode kept confusing me because I kept thinking that this was the penultimate episode, but it's not. There's still two more. Mm-hmm. So I was like, wait a minute. There's, like, too much going on right now for this to be the second to last. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I can't do math. There's two more episodes. Whoops. So
math is hard.
Math is difficult. So I think that's it for Leto, unless you want to add more stuff about him.
No, that's it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Wolfgang and Leto were really the big focuses of the episode. You really get very little from some of the others.
Well, we get a lot of Riley, but I don't want to talk about her until the end.
Yeah, we get a little bit from Kala as well.
Yes, a bit of Sun and Cassius. Yeah. A very, very tiny bit of Sun and Cassius. And yes, then we'll get some time with his father. I don't know, I'm... It's feeling like it was mainly Leto and Wolfgang, but then it seemed I feel like Leto and Wolfgang got the biggest share. Then maybe Riley got the second biggest, the third, biggest share. Math is hard. And I feel like everyone else kind of got split equally.
Don't strain yourself.
Yeah.
Don't strain yourself.
It's difficult, guys. I haven't done math in years. But no, I feel like it was, like, top two would be Wolfgang and Leto. Like, probably third place would be Riley in terms of screen time. And then everyone else kind of got more or less equal amount of time. I don't know, Kala might have gotten a little more, but I feel like no one got too left out, you know? He had this whole thing with the TV thing, and that was with Kala.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that was still...
Oh, yeah. He always gets the short end of the stick.
He does. I get the feeling that more is coming with him, but...
Sometimes people got shorter amounts of time, but they had more impactful things, like with Sun.
Yeah.
So, like, even though her scene was pretty short, I feel like she had... Like, that wasn't an important decision that she made. So I guess I see what you mean.
But I would go into Kala, personally.
Yeah, I was thinking the same. So Kala is in that, like, waiting room. I guess they're still at the hospital. And she's talking to her father. And this is what I was saying last episode. I was like, we haven't seen her dad in, like, forever. And then we finally see him, and he's great.
Yeah. Like, she's like, I've been confused about the wedding. And he's like, duh.
I know.
Like, come on. How stupid do you think I am? He didn't say that, but
basically, that's what he was getting at.
Like, I don't know. It was a really nice moment between the two of them. And yet, in a way, he was kind of oblivious.
Yeah, he was still, like, a little oblivious, for sure.
Because he's still kind of buying into the love marriage thing.
Yeah.
And it made it a little difficult to listen to his words because the basis of his, like his base assumption is flawed, which makes some of what he says not as valid. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think that's just because she can't say it. She can't spit it out that she doesn't love him.
No.
And that's why he has a misinformed view of the situation.
Oh, no, definitely. Yeah. No, I'm not blaming him, but, well, a little bit, because he is a little, I don't know, I feel like he's somewhat seeing what he wants to see.
Sure. But that's everyone,
because he wants his daughter to be happy. But it was still, like, a lot of his advice was kind of important for Kala to hear still. Because, you know, there are these different sides to whether she should continue to marry Raja.
Don't marry Rajan. We all know it's a bad idea, guys. Come on.
I mean, that's the exact thing, though. Like, he is assuming that she loves him, and she still sort of wants to marry him, but there's all these different issues in the way.
Really, there is no such thing.
There's literally nothing stopping her from walking away, in terms of, like, emotional baggage.
She got her father's blessing. She got her would-be father-in-law's blessing. I mean, girl, just do it already. God.
It's hard for her, though.
Yeah. I mean, I get it, but it's also like, just do it, man. In life, you have to make hard choices. You're an adult. You can get this done. I believe in you, Kala.
It's hard.
I just can't believe this whole arranged marriage thing is still stretching out to, like, 12 episodes. Like, oh my god, let it go. Jeez. This is the most frustrating plot to me, personally. Mm. I just can't stand this. Like, just because I feel like I'm very much not the kind of person that Kala is. Like, I wouldn't do this, like, at all. It's not my thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I understand making hard choices is it's scary and rough, but, like, you gotta do what you gotta do. But, yeah, then Kala, we see her talking with Cafius, too, about, like, you know, that humongous TV he has.
Yeah. It's the first time that they're interacting.
Yeah, I was so happy about that. I was like, first Cafius and Kala interaction. Yay!
It made me want to start, like, plotting out all the different, like, interactions and, like...
Gotta find a chart online, dude. I'm sure it exists.
I did a little bit of snooping. I didn't see one, but...
Maybe you can make one.
No. Mm-mm. I care, but I don't care that much.
But yeah, it was nice to see them interacting.
Because I was just thinking, like, I know there are pairings that we haven't seen yet. There are quite a lot with some of the ones that are just now starting to interact, but...
Does Cafius ever talk to any of the men? Like, I swear to God. Hello?
That's a good point. No, I was just thinking. I don't think so.
He's just been talking to all the women.
Yeah.
Cafius, you sly dog. Anyway.
I see what you did there, Cafius.
Seriously, though, like, he only talks to girls. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, they interact. They kind of talk about, like, Kala's like, I don't understand why someone would have, like, a huge TV, but not a bed, because a bed would be more important. And he's like, well, escapism is important. And I was like, of course they would say this. It's the Wachowskis. It's Netflix. Of course. like, all you needed to make the scene complete was a big Netflix logo on that TV screen. And it would have been, like, perfect.
I know, right?
Like,
as soon as Kala, like, asked that question, I was like, I know exactly what's coming here. Like, you just set yourself up for this, Kala. This is your fault.
You have.
Yeah, because this is definitely, like, a moment where it's very clear that that the characters are a mouthpiece for the creators.
I mean, that's been obvious since, like, the get-go, but, ugh.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there are different moments of it, but there are still flashes of it. I mean, obviously, all of the characters are the mouthpieces of the creators at all times, because that's how TV works. But
that's how any kind of writing or narrative works, right?
Right. But not, it's not quite that simple. And there's certain moments where they're like making thematic gestures and you're just like, yep, this is just the writers. This isn't even, they're not even making any overtures, any, they're not trying to hide it.
It's totally extra. Mm. It has no bearing on the plot.
Yep.
So it's like, let's just shoehorn this in because it's Netflix and why not? We have extra screen time, right? but that's, it was nice true. To see them interacting.
Yeah, and like there were kind of good moments in that scene where you're getting, I mean, you're not really learning anything more about Caffeus because we already knew his kind of love of the kind of action violent movies. But I like that he described Jean-Claude as the Fred Astaire of martial arts, basically.
Yeah.
I was like, that is kind of a cute, I don't know, I liked that.
Yeah. I mean, just having Kala kind of reflect on what just happened recently with, like, wow, this movie's really violent, the world is violent, and then her reflecting, like, yeah, it is violent, because she just saw her freaking future father-in-law, maybe, be, like, stabbed to death, so, yeah.
Yeah, basically. But, it was a good tie-in. Caffeus, yeah. Caffeus says that, like, he watches it when he needs to find courage, and Kala says that, you know, I could use that.
I think all the senses could use that, honestly.
Yeah, but, like, I kind of liked, there was this moment right after she said it where it transitions to Wolfgang, where I was like, well, obviously, Kala and Wolfgang have a little thing going on.
Have a but thing, it was thing also going like, on.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Wolfgang also has found a lot of escapism through, like, TV
Conan
and
the Barbarian,
films.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of liked that connection as well.
Yeah. And then, like, yeah, I'm just thinking with Caffeus, we keep getting hints, like, he has to do something that requires a lot of courage. So we know he has to make that choice, but, like, nothing has happened. So I'm just like, come on, bro, get on with it. There's only two episodes yeah. left. So I'm just like, come on, do something. Stop, like, huddling in your house while like, watching TV. Come on.
Yeah. Like, the last three episodes, he's
just
been
him
like,
saying, I need to do something. And we're like, okay, so, like, do it.
I mean, I think this is their version of pacing.
Yeah,
you
know?
Know,
but, like,
they're just
so
like,
annoying.
It can't all come together at once, but it wasn't really done particularly well, in my opinion, because, yeah, he's just kind of sitting around waiting for his moment to step up.
Yeah. It just feels like everyone is moving a lot faster. Although, we get, like, nothing from Nomi. We just get, like, her having sex with Amanita. And can I say, yeah. I freaking hated Amanita's line so much. So much.
The fireworks?
So much. That was so unnecessary. It was, like, Into the Badlands level, like, hitting you over the head with an idea or theme. Like, you don't need to say yeah. it. Don't say it. Don't say it. And then they said it. And you're just like, oh, no. Why did you say it? You keep yeah. intercutting sex with fireworks. We get the connection. We're not yeah. dumb. We get it. You don't have to say it, Amanita. Please, say anything else.
That's what I call fireworks.
I really didn't like that line. It really bothered me. Like,
yeah, it wasn't,
please don't.
Wasn't their best moment.
Please don't do this. Just don't do
but
this.
But that was the obligatory sex scene of the episode. So,
they're contractually obligated, I guess. But it's just, it was too much, dude. It was too much. Ugh.
Too much, darling. Too
and
much.
Also, the other person who got one scene was Sun. So
yes,
the lawyer comes by, has her sign a document, and she has her line, and then she signs. Although, what gave me pause in her scene was he mentioned something about a medical procedure, I think, and then I was like, wait, does this mean that she has to be like lobotomized or checked out by Dr. Mesker to leave jail? Like, I was a little bit, that was a little
no.
unclear to me. Yeah, I was like,
I don't know.
Someone mentioned something about a procedure. Maybe I got that mixed up with a different person in the Sun State cluster.
I don't think so. I don't think there was anything medical to do with her. There was, you know, she meets up with the lawyer, and they're talking about, like, her father's testimony in front of the court, and so as long as she agrees to the whole process, she could be out of jail in a week.
Yeah.
And they talk a little bit about her brother, because she, you know, she wants to know what's going to happen to him. And they say that the court was lenient for Sun because she, you know, cooperated and all that stuff. But they'll try and make an example of her brother. And so that kind of gives her pause. You know, right. we had seen her be really selfless. In a way. I don't know. Yeah.
It's good to see her, like, you know, standing up for herself, I guess, sticking up for herself.
We had seen this kind of grand sacrifice, which almost seemed, you know, inhuman, otherworldly, you know, like, beyond what a person could be expected to do, really.
She volunteered as tribute, Melissa.
Very true. And then Katniss got, like, a chance to change her mind, and she was like, okay.
Yeah.
Send Prim back out there.
I'm just, like, kind of scrolling through my notes right now.
Well, we know that Sun's brother is kind of not a horrible great person. So, I think, you know, she gives a few moments to think about it. And, you know, this episode had a lot of, like, culminating moments for the characters. I mean, it seems like, you know, all of them have kind of had their plots. And we're all reaching kind of the climax of their little plots. But they can't reach the climax all at the same time because there just isn't enough, like, time in an episode, I guess.
Right, so right.
They're a little spread out. But, we're getting, like, really important moments from, you know, Wolfgang, Leto, and Sun, essentially. And even though Sun's was very understated, you know, that she made the decision to say, yes, I'm going to sign this and, you know, essentially possibly condemn the company or family, whatever.
Well, her dad was the one who came to her and was like, I'm going to do thing, so.
Yeah, and, you know, without that piece of it, you know, she wouldn't have. But, you know, I do think there was kind of some courage in signing her name and doing something for her instead of doing something for other people.
Yeah. Shall we move on to Will, or do you have any more notes on the other characters?
No. Will is good.
Let's go to Will.
Will's good.
So we find out it's the 4th of July, Independence Day, not the horrible movie.
It is not that horrible, okay?
I really didn't like it, dude.
Speaking of Independence Day.
Yeah, what of it?
It was on TV last night.
Oh, God.
And so I watched a little bit of it, and it is not a horrible movie. I'm not saying, like, it's a great movie or anything, but, like, it was fine. For what it was fine.
It's not a horrible movie, but I just, again, aggressively mediocre. Aggressively mediocre. Nice. But, yeah, on to Will, who is...
Yeah, so he meets up with Jonas. Yeah. On the 4th of July.
And Jonas is really freaking creepy.
Yeah.
He is real creepy.
He gives off some weird vibes.
Yeah, he really does. He's like, I was just thinking, again, I know I mention heroes all the time, but I'm going to bring it up again. He's like uglier Mohinder, I guess. I don't even know, dude. Like, it's weird.
Very uglier, I guess. I don't know.
He's not, like, super ugly. He's just, like, a creepier, weirder, not as attractive version of Mohinder, I feel like. But that's just
my feeling. I guess I sort of see that, because, like, both of them kind of have the answers, you know? And so, like, a lot of the other characters have to come to them, or he has to go to them to kind of give the answers. In this kind of case, he only talks to Will, but Will kind of, like, gets the information and spreads it out among his cluster, you know?
Yeah. But I was like, I don't know about this this Jonas character. He's being real weird.
He's being real suspicious.
Being a real suspect up in here.
Yeah. He even says that he envies people with clear-cut allegiances.
Oh, like when he's talking, hint.
Because he's talking about, like, his country. Like, he was born in India, and then he moved to London, and he moved to New York, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, I was like, does this mean something? Are we getting some issues here?
Yeah, exactly. So he talks to Jonas again, and then he kind of catches up with Riley, I guess. He's bringing... We see that crate... Oh, did I skip something?
But yes. Because you skipped something kind of important in that we get the title drop with Jonas.
Oh, right. Yeah, the whole... Sorry, how did I forget? The whole thing, like, they're not actually human beings, homo sapiens. They're, like, a different species or something.
That was one of the most ridiculous moments in the entire show for me.
Maybe that's why I blocked it from my brain. Because it was getting a little bit too much. Because I was like, what do you mean they're not human? And then when... So when Jonas starts going into the whole us versus them thing, I was like, is he being, like, they as in Whispers and their team they? Or they, like, homo sapiens they? I was like, what the heck is happening here?
I feel like... I don't know the exact example you're talking about, but I think he was mostly talking about homo sapiens they.
Which was really gross and creepy.
It was really weird. It was very much like a villain monologue in a way.
Yeah, maybe this is the thing that's supposed to turn us off to Jonas because he's such a creeper, but... Oh, man. It was freaking weird, you know, when he started talking about, like, us versus them.
Yeah, because he says, what is human? And he's like, you know, he lists off all these potential attributes about, like, love and whatever. And he's like, well, we're more human than they are then.
Okay, Jonas, take it down now, like, please.
I know, right? Oh, my gosh. And he starts talking about, like, evolution and all that other stuff. And, like,
bruh.
I'm not exactly, like, a science person. Like, you know that. I know that. But, like, this is BS science BS.
Oh, of course. Was he trying to get to the point where it was like, oh, so there used to be a lot more sensates, but now, like, everyone has, like, the regular homo sapiens have killed off all the sensates, or, like, I don't know what the heck that was all about. Frankly, when he started talking about, like, oh, look at, like, bees or birds flying in groups, I was like, okay, you need to, like, step it back, because, no. But then again, this is such a, like, a Wachowskian thing to do. Like, again... Let's think back to The Matrix. There was that one guy who was special and can save the world. So, yeah this isn't really anything particularly new to the Wachowskis, you know?
It was just every moment they spent trying to justify the sensate world using real science. it was laughable. A waste of time. It was just... Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
The whole thing is that a sensate cluster has absolutely no basis in nature whatsoever.
Let it go. And it's basically a supernatural phenomenon at this point. Just, like, let it be.
Yeah, like, it exists in sci-fi land. Don't tell me about nature, because, yes, there are things about animals we don't understand fully. I will grant you that. But that is hardly the necessary basis for that leap you're trying to thrust onto me. Like,
yeah. Again, no, I think I just kind of... Listen to it, rolled my eyes, and, like, blocked it from my memory because I don't care. Like, it's the part of something that I care the least about, so.
And yet, it's extremely important. I mean,
it is important, but, like, I'm just...
Important.
If they explain it in a different way, like, not this weird science BS way, then yeah. Absolutely.
It should be important, but given, like, I want to forget this ever happened. Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
It was weird, and it was very... It was a very weird moment also because it was us versus them in terms of,
and we are
of,
the
like,
them.
Your audience is the them.
Yeah, like, don't be so hostile, dude. Stop. Just stop.
It's weird because, like, in, like, there are a lot of us versus them kind of sci-fi, you know, powers, movies, and TV show, right? Like, you know, there's heroes and X-Men and... Oh, God, there's just so many. I don't want to list, get into it. But the way, the ones that work are the ones, in my opinion, that get the them, and whatever makes them them, it can be used as a metaphor for other thems that exist in our world, right? So whether that's... like the gay rights movement or mental health, or I don't know, there's so many, But yeah. Any kind of oppressed group or any kind of group that's struggling or a them in our world. It depends on when the piece of
the oppressed created. Group would be the us, would it not?
No.
No.
It's the them. In my opinion. Because, like, think about, like, X-Men, right? So, like, X-Men are the them, right? I understand what you're getting at, okay?
Aren't we supposed to identify kind of... with the ostracized group, though?
No.
If the ostracized group is us.
No, okay. So, like, I'm going to use X-Men, okay? So, okay. Like, there in the X-Men world, there are the people with powers, the mutants, and there are the humans, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're watching X-Men, as humans, we're supposed to identify with the humans, right?
Mm.
But we don't. We identify with the X-Men. Because although they're mutants and they're very different from us, they have powers and crazy stuff like that, we identify with the way that they're treated and the way that they are human. And, you know, we identify with them and the way that they're being oppressed, you know? Even if we don't necessarily identify with them as mutants, we identify with them as on a deeper level.
I think I see what you mean.
Like, you know, they're the thing that makes them different. Even though we can't relate to that, we all relate to the feeling of feeling different, you know? Right.
Feeling different or being left out.
Right.
It's part of the human condition.
Exactly. I feel like one of the reasons this scene failed for me is that it was very much centered on that one, like, you know, the difference. But it didn't use it as, like, a metaphor or as, like, a jumping off point. They were just like, humans. They like their secrets. That's how we're... No one knows about us because they like their secrets. They're so weird. Blah, blah, blah. We're awesome.
Right. It didn't feel like there's no basis for it. So it was, like, really strange. Yeah. That makes sense. I feel like it's, like, they tried to do the metaphor thing. Oh, sorry. Go on. Sorry. I cut you off. Say that
again. No, I'm just saying that, like, it took me a while to get me back to the point I was trying to get to. But I think we got there. No, I understand what you're saying.
I think it maybe got mixed up because I feel like a lot of the people we are dealing with in the Sensate group are oppressed in some fashion. But I think, yeah, like, the way Jonas approaches it is, like, kind of wrong. But...
Yeah, yeah.
But do you, that's like, exactly I mean, what I get. The women in the show face oppression. The people of color, the queer characters in the show, they face obstacles. So I feel like in that sense it works. But again, the way Jonas is kind of explaining it
doesn't work. No, I absolutely agree with that. It was more, it was not the show itself that I had the problem with as much as this particular scene and the way it was presented.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Jonas may be the villain, so maybe it's...
Right,
maybe
we don't know. There's still two more episodes left. Sorry, I just, like, kind of flicked my headphones out of my ear. But, yeah, so I guess... I think after that he has his connection with Riley, right?
Yeah, there is one more moment in the scene with Jonas, though, that I'd like to mention. Jonas says, "You're a good cop, aren't you?"
Well, that's just like when people ask good questions, probing questions, then yeah, they're a cop. Yeah, duh.
Yeah, but like, you know, like in the earlier episodes, I was like, we get it. He's a good cop. He's the goodest cop. And I'm like, okay.
We get the point. He's a good cop. TM, trademark, copyright.
Exactly.
Oh,
like,
man.
I know we haven't seen him do police things for a while because he's like suspended and whatnot, but. We get it. We still remember. He's a cop. He's a good cop.
He's a good cop, TM. Yeah.
Exactly.
Seriously.
So
we transition towards, like, more happier scenes of kind of... I love that shot where Will's kind of walking through the water and the kids are playing. And it's just... Oh, it's so good visually.
Yeah.
I really like the happier Sensate music. That was playing a lot through this episode, which made me suspicious because I was like, something bad's gonna happen. But I really did like the happy Sensate, like the happier version of the Sensate theme that was playing a lot through the show.
Mm-hmm.
When Will starts talking to Riley and he's like, again, choosing to make out with her, I'm like, bro, aren't you all just making out with thin air again?
Yep.
I mean, I guess there's like massive people around, and like somehow no one's staring at them. They're just ignoring him. Maybe they think he's like drunk on Independence Day or something. But I was like, come on, man. Like this is too much. You got caught by your friend kissing the air. Like, why are you doing this in public, dude? You should know better.
Yeah, I had the exact same thought. I was like, I get it, and like it's a sweet moment, but like most of my brain is fixated on like, you're kissing air, dude. So
yeah.
But I did like, they have this one, I don't remember who says it, but one of them says that, you know, if this is how it's like when we're so far away, can you imagine how it's going to be like when we actually meet in person?
What if it was actually worse because their memories were making it better than they think it would be? Just
saying.
That
is sad.
Just saying. That's really sad, but I'm just saying.
That's
just
sad. That okay.
I don't know. I feel like Will got a lot of cool visual stuff going on with his section. Mm. Like, there's, like, a really nice fire transition. I can't remember to who it is, like, to whom or to who the transition was going to. But, like, I think his father lights up a barbecue and it flares up. And then it turns into someone else's scene. But it was so good. I mean, I'm just trying to think what other notes I have on Will. Because he gets more stuff, like, I guess, with Jonas and then... I think a little bit towards the end when he's talking to his father. But it was so cute seeing him on that boat and then, you know, Cassius and Sun join him and they're like, we love fireworks. And it was just like, oh, my heart. My heart. Yeah. So good.
Yeah, it was so nice. Because, like, you know, the Sun is still stuck in prison. And it was a really sweet moment. For a second when they kind of, like, panned over, I thought, like, all of the Sensates were going to be there. I'm like, it's a small boat. Like, come on. But
it'd be pretty awkward if Nomi was there.
Yeah.
Just saying.
It's still kind of unclear how much they know about, like, you know, when other people are doing other things.
I guess, like, again, it's never explained. Maybe they can just block it out or something. I don't know, dude. I don't know.
Yeah. The only thing I have about Will left is just, you know, it was kind of interesting learning more about his father, about how his father was, you know, an electrician and how much Will's father had hated it, and so he had decided to become a cop, and he had that kind of strained relationship.
Mm.
But, you know, it was just kind of an interesting depth in that character we hadn't seen before.
Yeah,
but yeah, sure. That's all I really have for Will. Do you have anything else about
him? No, that's it. I'm ready to talk about Riley and then close. So,
Riley, yeah. I was born ready.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Well, speaking of being born, there's a lot of that in this episode.
But, oh God.
Yeah. Oh God, indeed, they did not hold back at all.
They did not.
So Riley is going to see your father perform. Which hasn't happened in a long time. It's just really sweet and cute. She starts off by casually giving her father drugs, so that's fun. Let's see, so anything else?
That's nice. I don't know, like, when the music begins, it just, even though the music is still kind of, like, happy, it feels, like, very ominous to me.
Yeah, dude. I was like, because we keep hearing over and over again, bad things are going to happen if you go to Iceland. Bad things are going to happen if you go to Iceland. So I'm just ready for the bad thing to happen in Iceland.
Yeah.
Because we've been waiting for, like, what feels like 5 episodes or something for the bad thing in Iceland to happen. So, you know, something bad's going to go down. Even though the music is... But that made me even more suspicious. Like, having such happy, upbeat music, I was like, something real bad's going to happen. And I thought it was going to be to her dad. I told you how I thought he was going to die because, you know, the father must die. But...
Yeah.
The father did not die in this episode. And we had a whole different thing occur. But we get, like, again, I really liked how it was almost similar to, or like a reverse of, I guess, episode 4, the ending with the what's going on. Like, how Riley's music is tying everyone together. It was kind of similar, you know? Like, it's her father performing this piece, and all the Sensates are in the audience listening and crying and, for some reason, envisioning their own births.
That happened.
That was so strange. I get it, but it was also really weird. But yeah, everyone's like kind of in the audience crying together. I'm still scrolling through my notes trying to figure out if I skipped anything. But yeah, I guess like I really liked how they transitioned from her father in the present playing the piano to her father in the past playing the piano to his wife who was giving birth. I got real confused for a moment because I was like, wait a minute, is that like Riley giving birth and her dad playing piano? But then I realized after, you know, a couple more rounds of the montage, oh, that was her mother, and we're just getting everyone's actual birth. Because I was like, how do people, how are they envisioning how, why, what, when, where?
Don't think about it.
I know, that's a show, don't think about it too much. I thought some of the baby bumps were like real fake, so I was like, okay guys, please, should have spent some of the budget on that. But
some of them were better than others.
Yeah, for sure. I thought it was very fitting how pretty much all the births were like really thematic. Yeah. You know? And I mean, this show again, it's not always the most subtle show, but let me try to go through them. I'm going to go on the cast list and check. So, we have Riley, she's born as her father is playing the piano. So, okay, makes sense. Will is born in the back of a cop car. Okay, thematic, makes sense. For some reason, I'm not really remembering Sun's birth scene very well. What's happening with her?
That was where her mother was in a graveyard, I believe.
Oh, right. And yeah, yeah, it's yeah.
Like the quickest birth ever. Like,
all these were like the quickest birth ever, honestly. Well, Angelica, I mean, what the heck were you doing?
No, but the others, though. like the mothers, like, were clearly like in position, like they had been like going through labor, and Son's mother was just like, I'm gonna go visit.
She just like did like a, like sudden, she just dropped like what.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
I guess like that makes sense though, because why would she be in the graveyard if she was anticipating giving birth around that time? So
right, exactly, why would she do that?
Yeah, but again, thematically, that makes sense because, you know, her mother has passed and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little over the top for some of
them. The whole thing was over the top, dude. Okay, yeah. Caphias, I don't know if his birth was particularly thematic, but do you recall anything with him?
No, there wasn't anything, like, yeah, notable.
Because Caphias is a pretty bland character at times. I mean, unless they had the mom giving birth in the back of, like, a freaking van or bus or something. Then, I mean, honestly, though. And then we get Wolfgang is being born, I guess, in a pool of water. Which, again, no, but here's the thing. That was also thematic, right? Because don't you remember?
Yeah.
He had the whole thing with him floating in the pool couple episodes ago.
Yeah, I remember.
Kala is born as it's raining, and I think when we first meet Kala, it's raining, and then we have the whole rain Wolfgang scene, and so I guess rain is like a thematic thing for Kala's character. Leto is freaking hilariously born while everyone in his family, including his mother, are watching TV.
that was hilarious.
And then Nomi is born, through C-section in a hospital. I was like, oh, finally, we get, like, one person is actually born in a hospital. Like, this seems super, like, you would think that there'd be more of them in the hospital, but anyway, Nomi is born in the hospital through C-section, and I don't know if that's supposed to be, like, the fact that she was the only C-section and everyone else was, like, I guess, like, a natural through the, like, the vagina canal or whatever. I don't know if that was supposed to be, like, oh, like, some kind of weird tie-in to, like, how she's trans. Like, I don't know if that's supposed to be special or significant.
I don't know.
But, I mean, I definitely noticed that this was the one C-section and everyone else had, like,
yeah,
a, I guess, quote-unquote, natural birth or whatever. So, I don't know how I feel about the birth scenes, just because, like, it was like, I know Sensate's very big on life and death, like comparing the two kinds of things, but I was also kind of like, And I mean, it was nice to see everyone kind of getting emotional to the music, and it was a big, you knew you were growing to a climax for something. But it was like I wasn't really understanding, like, why are they envisioning their own births? Like, were they what? I just didn't quite get it. Although I did like, I think the transition was good, you know? The transition from Riley's father playing the piano in the present to the past, like, I like that. I thought it was really strange. That was a thing that happened. that I guess matched the music, but yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, I mean, there was, yeah, it was just, it was the kind of moment that just would not exist on TV.
No, I mean, not at all.
Beyond just the practicality.
Sure.
It was just so unnecessary. I mean, like, I understand why it was necessary, and I understand what they're doing, but it was just, it just felt very indulgent.
It was too much.
Yeah, basically.
Too much.
I didn't need that.
I mean, I appreciate the thematic stuff going on, but yeah, it was a bit much. But I guess I kind of liked it too, because we got a lot from the fathers in this episode, but we also got a lot from the mothers just through this like birth scene thing. So I appreciated that. And then I guess, you know, we also get Riley giving birth to her daughter. And then that starts to turn into like a PTSD kind of flashback.
Yeah.
Is it PTSD? Sorry, I always get my acronyms mixed up. Post-traumatic. PT. No, PT. I got it right the first time. PTSD.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, oh no, things are gonna go bad. And then we get that cut to like her bloody face, and then she faints.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh my gosh. So that was like, I guess, the second moment in the episode for me that was like a real emotional like high point. And I'm thinking, just in terms of like trying to guess what's going to happen in the next episode or two, does this mean she's going to be carted off to the hospital and kind of put in a situation like Nomi, where Metzger or Whiskers or Whiskers, I guess all Whiskers, Whispers, excuse me, Whispers is going to try to
Whiskers a lot.
They call me Whiskers. They call me Mr. Whiskers. But I was just thinking, like, oh no, she just fainted. Does this mean she's going to be in the hospital and then potentially at danger because BPO or Whispers is there or something? So that's my main concern with that. Also, yeah, speaking of births, boring. I'm just going to bring this up again, because I think I probably should have said this, like, last episode or something, but, like, remember way back when we covered episode 1 and I was like, Angelica gave birth to these people, and you were just laughing at me? Like, she totally did, though. Like, they basically said that. Like, metaphorically, she gave. Or, like, we still don't know 100% what's going on with the Sensei connection, but based on what I know, as of this episode, she kind of did, sort of. It was she and Jonas were responsible for the cluster happening, right? Or something. So, she did give birth to them.
I don't know.
It's confusing, to me, I guess. I don't know.
It's kind of unclear. I don't know.
I just know you also said something about Angelica and Jonas being responsible for this cluster.
That's true.
And then, like, Jonas mentioned that the father of his cluster, not his actual father, was giving him advice or falsehoods or whatever. So I'm just putting that out there, that what I predicted in episode 1, even though you laughed at me, has some basis in fact or in the show. Anything else you want to bring up before we close, or?
No, not really. I mean, I really enjoyed the episode.
Yeah.
It felt worthy of its place in the season, you know? We've only got 2 episodes left, and you definitely feel that way. You've got a lot of, I wouldn't call it entirely rising action, because we do get some kind of conclusions to some of the subplots, but the main plot of the season is continuing to rise.
I feel like Leto's subplot is more or less done. I mean, maybe we'll get some fallout from the media about, like, him being gay or something, but, like, I feel like that's more or less resolved.
Yeah.
I feel like things are starting to get tied up, you know? Like, like, Sun has signed the paper. We'll see what happens in the next two episodes. I guess Kala still hasn't figured her ish out. Wolfgang is pretty much done, I guess, unless his uncle comes after him. Like, things are either wrapping up or will be wrapped up shortly, you know?
Yeah. You know, I complained early on in this, when we were covering this show, about how, you know, maybe the characters are stereotypes, maybe they're not. And, you know, I think by this point in the season, I would say, you know, that they have overcome the stereotypes and they've really kind of become fleshed out, real characters. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
But the difficulty that I've had with this show is inherent in its format, essentially.
Mm.
Because to make the show work, each of the subplots has to be interesting enough to keep your attention.
Yeah.
But to do that, they have to kind of create over-the-top situations that almost feel soap opera-ish sometimes.
Yeah, you mentioned this before, yeah.
And, you know, we're kind of seeing that. Like, every single person is having, like, this ridiculously implausible situation that they're in, you know, whether it's dealing with drug dealers or fighting over diamonds with rocket launchers or you know, any of the situations that they're in are very, very overly dramatic, and each of them is set up well enough that I enjoy each of the characters' moment of triumph individually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you take it together as a whole, it can just feel really, although like the show is about like, you know, a human connection and realism and all that other stuff, you're
putting it about realism?
Such. Well, I mean, it's about like the human connection. Right. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's really their deeper message about how like, oh, we're all related to each other, like emotionally and whatever.
I think that's why the us versus them thing doesn't jive. Especially when you get that scene with them being born, like, that's a connection to their mothers, like, and if their mothers are this other, then, like, that's stupid.
Yeah.
It goes against the message of the show.
I agree.
Yeah. Sorry if I cut you off, but...
No, that was essentially all. Yeah, so, I mean, that is, I don't know, it's one of the, I wouldn't call it necessarily a downside of the show. Because, again, I do think it's kind of inherent in what the show is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, each of the characters has to have its... Actually, no. I'm going to take that back. That's not true. Like, if you think about in Heroes, each of the characters had their own subplot within, like, their own life that was interesting. But none of them were so over the top, I guess.
Mm.
Then again, Heroes didn't do that well, so maybe that's not the best example.
Dang.
I just burned you, Heroes.
We're both aware of, like, the shows that we like, they have flaws.
Absolutely.
All the shows have flaws. It's just, we keep watching them because they have the pros outweigh the cons, right? So.
Exactly. And, you know, I... I don't know. Sensei has enough pros that I enjoy it, and I recommend it to other people if they're into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There is the barrier. Well, we can talk about this more at the end when we finish the season, but
the first like however many episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it's a barrier to entry, as they would say in the economics world.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's all for me.
That's all what?
That's all I've got.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it. I enjoyed the episode. And, yeah, I don't know. Just, like, those high points of, like... For me, it was the bazooka gun or rocket launcher or whatever. And the very ending that were just, like, such standout moments to me. But I was just so happy where everyone is headed or where they're at. Well, I mean, I guess minus Riley. I'm not happy that she's, like, you know, fainted. But... I'm happy that Leto has kind of figured his ish out. Sun has kind of signed that contract. And, like, you know, things are happy. Because this show can get very dark and depressing and heavy. And sometimes it makes me not want to watch it. But so when you get episodes like this where things are kind of, there's a tension, you know, but like people are being are triumphing. It's just nice.
Yeah.
In addition to all that plot story stuff that's going on too, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I guess we are done with covering What is Human. And we gotta pick a new movie to watch and record that. So we will see you next time with a new movie.
Didn't we pick one?
Did we? Oh, wait. Was it Men in Black? I think we're gonna do Men in Black. Okay, guys. Yeah. Sorry. It's been a long week. So we will be back next week with Men in Black. Hopefully it will be a one part thing and not a two parter. So yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Some comedy, some Will Smith, some stuff from the 90s, and hopefully all better than Independence Day. I will never let go of that grudge I have against that movie. All right, have a good night, guys. See you later.
Bye-bye.